I've been all across this country.
Just because, like, we have killed some time here, and there's not really a risk of you going off for, like, 45 minutes about it and getting into, like, some really salacious detail, like my podcast with KB6. But what did lead to your decision to leave RCW and go to PWA?
Yeah, it was just time for a change. It kind of all worked out in a bit of a perfect storm. So a lot of the reason of, I guess I'd say, like, the tension I was having in RCW towards the end of things was because of the Archer Report. Because some people would do it very easily and readily, and some people wouldn't. And certain people saw me as sort of overlooking them. But when I went to them, there was nothing new. Like, whereas I can kind of come up with some weird and sort of crazy stuff. And some of it not always worked with, like, a Metal or Jack Pryde or something like that. But then I'd go to someone else and we couldn't get something different all the time, or it would kind of end up being the same thing. And so I kind of gravitated towards the people, or they were too busy. And so I gravitated towards my dependable people, because I know I could go to them at any time and get content. And yeah, just certain people, it was, were thinking I was, things start being said, people start gossiping, and people were thinking, you know, I was like siding with, there's always politics, so I was siding with one side of the locker room, like, and not this. And
nepotism type.
Yeah. And like I tried to explain, I'm like, it's not that. It's just, you know, like, if I seem like I'm working with this person or that person more, it's just because they're ready to work with me at any point in time. Can you be like that? And so there was that. And then I had some, obviously some tension with Steven, because years prior, you know, I tried helping him run the business or work towards something. And I invested, and I was partner in the company for a bit there, in the agreement that if, you know, I felt like things were working out, I'd get my investment back. And I haven't really talked about this too much, actually, I don't think, to anyone. And so I was trying to get that money back, because basically with him, he, and understandably from a promoter side of thing, you want to listen to veterans more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he'd kind of listen to veterans more, kind of play off or talk to different people. And so where I was with him and the understanding of trying to make things better, and you could see, like, where I was working towards trying to make wrestling in general better, you know, getting on the Bear and doing different things and working with local companies and stuff like that, trying to increase our knowledge in our brand of wrestling, and getting a View Weekly, like having a thing written about me in View Weekly during my time in RCW. And
you did the weather.
I did the weather and won $1,000 as part of a contest. And it was just, that was my push, but I wanted that for RCW. Like, I wanted to have the power to be able to do that with RCW, but the Squeak sort of took that away, which is, it's his business. It's his ball. He can take it and go home, but it just didn't work out. So I was at a point where I was like, okay, well, we made an agreement, please repay my investment. And he wasn't. And obviously it's not a great business to be in. And I did get the money back, but in that process of working towards that, I just sort of realized, like, this isn't working for me. You know, the Arch Report was working fine, but there was all this tension. And I got into something with someone in the back that I believe Squig sort of pushed to happen, which shouldn't have happened. And, like, we could have talked it out, and it was just all awkward and stupid. And and I just,
political drama.
And it's like, for me, if I ever wanted any say in the company, it was only to better it and help it. It wasn't a political thing to get this person over or that person over. I wasn't going to bat for people in a malicious way to get, you know, go into business for helping them go into business for themselves. It was, like, in general, helping the company, but it wasn't understood by everybody. And so, yeah, I actually had Kurt get a hold of me out of the blue, and I had actually done, I don't know if I would say it was a tryout, but I had went when the Millennial Rebels first started. Dr. Kyoto was actually at his noodle shop at the time in Calgary, and they wanted me to come in as a manager for the Millennial Rebels. So I went back for a show and hung out and talked and had a discussion and kind of hung out in the locker room for the whole show. And then Dr. Kyoto's business, he decided to close his noodle shop in Calgary. And so he had more time to do the wrestling. And I have the utmost respect for that man. He is basically the veteran manager. He is a warrior, and so is like when Kurt told me, you know, like
noodles were dope too.
Oh, they were amazing, man. They were amazing. And so, yeah, I went to his noodle shop to meet him on a show to Calgary and just tell him how much respect I have for his work and that kind of stuff. And so when, you know, they said, I don't even know if they had necessarily told me. I never heard anything back. And then I saw Kyoto come back and I'm like, I'm okay with that because he should have that. He's been there for however many years and he's coming back. That's perfectly fine. And then it came to the point where, basically Duke Durango was retiring, didn't want to travel much like myself, and was going to be the commissioner of Calgary, and he needed one for Edmonton. And so he said, he's like, well, would you like to do this? And we had a very long, actually couple conversations, and he said, like, this is the time, and everything kind of just worked out well. It was like, I can wrap everything up, and everything, you know, is happening with RCW right now that is just not working for me, and I can just go there. And yeah, so I did. I basically said, and it wasn't necessarily completely honest, but I said I was taking a break. I was just stepping away from RCW.
I remember we were talked about it on the first podcast
on the Phantom podcast. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm sorry, but okay. I did that with the majority of people. I think the only people that really knew were I had to tell Barricade because he's my editor for the Archer Report and he's my partner in Paragons of Style, and I didn't want to I owed it to him. And then I don't know if, and I Metal. Oh no, I didn't even tell Metal. I feel like that hurt our relationship too because we were talking all the time, and then all of a sudden I just said I was taking a break. So I told him, I sent him a message right before I walked through the curtain that night. Just, by the way, you're gonna see this, this is what's happening, this is why I did it. But I just felt it was time for a change, time to move on, and I wanted the experience of being in another company like full term. And PWA is, I'm not knocking any other company in town, but they've sort of had the longest lineage, the biggest houses, and I needed to be a part of that and reach more people and learn from new people. You know, I kind of done everything with everybody in RCW. And while RCW is great because they bring in a lot of people, there was a whole bunch of people, like I mentioned, like Andy Anderson and MRB, who I'd worked some shows with. And and Duke, I was hoping, but obviously, you know, like Kurt said, he was gone, and Sheik, and, you know, and meeting all these, and worked with Colton Kelly, who I'd worked with in Force when he was just a little guy, and just get to work with all these people that I've sort of had a chance to work with on little shows over the years, but I wanted to work with them and be part of PWA and get to, you know, pick Kurt's brain too, because Kurt's been doing it for a long time. Mm-hmm. Kurt worked for the WWE. He was a promotions guy for the WWE when they were locally. When they were in town, he would go out and basically set up, you know, like local interviews or do postering and stuff like that. He also worked for Stampede at the end with Bruce, being a road agent.
I mean, it's kind of becoming clear that it's sort of long overdue for Kurt Sorokin to come and be on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, I'll have to bug him. You think we're going to talk a long time, just you wait. The man's been doing it for so long, he has a lot to say. And I like, that's what I love. Like, I really enjoyed my sit-downs with Kurt because through talking, it's, again, like sitting down with a veteran, right? Like, he may not have wrestled in the ring, and he has a... He did at the Battle of the Dome. He was one of the nightmares in the Battle Royal at the Saddle Dome. Yeah. Oh,
I'm going to have to ask him about that if we do get the podcast. Like, I honestly have not had a lot of talk with him. Like, I spoke to him at the Clandestine show, I think, and he was like, yeah, your facial expressions are really good. And I was like, oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm glad I stopped wearing a mask.
Yeah. No, Kurt's great because he'll give you this, because it was funny because one of the reasons Kurt said he called me is that when I first started with Force as Thaddeus, so it was brand new, first time being a manager really, and Kurt actually gave me some advice, and I took that advice and I used it, I worked upon it, and that was one of the first things he said to me when he called me to ask me to be part of PWA. It was, years ago I talked to you and I gave you some advice, and he's like, I've given lots of wrestlers that haven't worked for me just a little bit of advice here and there when I meet them. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you took it and used it. So I knew right away that you were the kind of guy I want to work for me. And so, yeah, it just worked out well. And I basically did my Archer report farewell, saying I was taking time off. And then 2 days later, I walked out for PWA. And it was, you know, I just wanted that moment of surprise. And had I been, no offense to Squig, but had I been honest with him, something would have came out, or he would have told one of the boys and something would have came out. And I just really wanted that, if I was going to debut somewhere else, I wanted a element of a surprise to it. I wanted to see how far I'd come as Thaddeus Archer III, to see what kind of reaction coming out for a new company in the same town, mind you, but coming out for a new company would do. And the reaction I got was more than I thought I would get. And it's worked out well. Like, it's, I've enjoyed being there. Archer Report changed a little bit, but in a lot of ways, good ways. And yeah, it's, you know, I've got a chance to work with work in front of more people than I've ever worked in front of. Those Nate shows, like, you're looking at like 800,000 people. Oh no, and work with people like.
You did the Dome in Calgary.
Like, yeah, I got to slip on the ice in the Saddle Dome. Like, it was. It just, yeah, all these opportunities to get to work with.
Some goofy guy on your Facebook page that was like trying to call you out, make himself sound like a big deal. And I was like, bro, have you ever worked the Saddle Dome? Like,
oh, who was that?
I don't remember, you know, and I think that just sort of says a lot.
I don't know. I don't tend to, like, I will toy with those people a little bit, but for the most part, it'll just be, it's like people who are anti-maskers and anti-vaxxers and stuff. You're never going to change their mind. They're never going to change yours. It's like, you don't need to engage them.
As far as that goes, like, I'm buddies with Marky, and he just got out of the hospital after being in an induced coma. So, you can bet your butt I booked my vaccination appointment, you know?
Yeah. Just no, I was, it was funny. It was funny. Like, I came home and told my family, like, everybody was so invested in Marky. Cause like, I came home and told my family, because like, literally every day my wife would be like, have you heard anything about Marky?
Like, even my mom was asking me about it, like, on a daily basis, being like, how's your friend Marky doing?
My ex-wife, who I really wasn't with her during my time in wrestling, she asked my daughter to talk to me about it, just because she had heard about it. Like, everybody, obviously with the journal article and everything, had heard about it. But so he just an awesome guy, Marky. Like, so of course everyone's gonna just rally around and try to help him, support. And I mean, how hard it hit a guy like that who is in such good shape. Like,
yeah.
It just goes to show that this is something we should take seriously and work our way through, guys. But it's been a difficult, you know, 14, 15 months for everyone, a year and a half for everyone. So I get frustration, but at the same time, you got to take care of everybody else. Like, my wife has COPD. So right off the hop, as you could see with me online, I was obviously pushing to be careful, because she could, if she gets COVID, she's done, or very close. She could very well easily be done. Right. Yeah. So, it's to everybody else, you're young and healthy and you're a pro wrestler and you have bleach blonde hair and you wear rope goggles and you don't care if other people get sick, but I care if other people get sick, you know, we got to do our part all together, work as one, right? Like, why can't we be in a Star Trek universe and not a fucking apocalyptic universe here? Night of the apocalyptic universe.
I mean, I'm just going to, like, steer clear of that one, you know.
I had to throw one out anyway. No, but it's just fair. let's be kind to each other. Like, let's think of each other as well-being. Like, stop on the street and help someone up who's fallen, and it's coming from a heel, you know. You give a guy a sandwich when you give a homeless person a sandwich, you know, like, donate the coats for the homeless kind of thing. Like, and take care of people when it comes to COVID. Like, wear your mask, get out there, and think of your fellow man. Like,
it boggles my mind, because it's not really that encumbersome, you know.
Mm-mm.
Like, okay, if I'm gonna go to Walmart, I gotta put a mask on, like, not a big deal. Like,
no, if anything, I don't have to smell the humanoids that are all around me, right? Like,
that's fair. I did want to ask, like, because a significant amount of time has passed since you left RCW and went to PWA, and I just wanted to ask, did you get a chance to like bury the hatchet with Squig?
Excuse me. Off and on again.
Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, Squig and I did bury the hatchet a little while later, and we've kind of have had a couple back and forths. You know, I just sometimes the things he does, I just think they're detrimental, and some of the, you know, the people he could book or can book as a business owner, you can pick and choose, and just some of those people I don't think are good for the business or good for locker rooms. And then we all enjoy our drama, and he enjoys stirring the pot, and that drives me nuts. So we have buried the hatchet. At the same time, I still feel like there's probably some animosity between us, but I have no ill will towards him. Like I said, it's just some choices. When it comes to business, I wish he'd make different. He's been doing it longer than me, so I should respect him as a veteran, but at the same time, you know, respect is a thing that's earned. And the biggest thing that for me, I still really hold a bit of a grudge to, is I went out of my way as his friend to try to help his business, and he kind of threw that back, or he spit it back in my face. Like, I went out of my way to help and try to help RCW, and he took some of the stuff I did and basically denied it or threw it back in my face. And so it was like, all that hard work in trying to help a guy I cared for at the time, and it didn't work out. So anyways, you're back now. But
yes, I am.
Basically, yeah, no, we've buried the hatchet. I still feel like there's some animosity. I make some comments towards things online sometimes that he doesn't like, but I like to point things out that shouldn't be done or speak my mind. You know, we're, as much as we're different companies, we're one big community.
Yeah.
And with only a certain amount of fans, and if we want to get new fans, we have to stop spitting in the faces of the old fans. I don't know if that makes sense, but we have to get out of those old habits that have kind of hurt the industry and get into better habits, right? And that's what drives me nuts about him. Sometimes I say things, but I mean, for the most part, we buried the hatchet. So it is what it is. I don't know if we'll ever be buddies again, but there was a point in time I considered him a close friend, and I really wanted to help RCW. But
I mean, I'm not going to like blow smoke up anyone's ass. I've had my differences with Squig. I mean, you're well aware of all that.
Yeah, I'm probably the cause of some of them, too. So. Yeah. I'm very protective of you, Kyle. I'm very protective of my close-knit people. I apologize for everything, but
it's cool. Like, I mean, honestly, like, I'm kind of glad that things eventually did sort of blow up, and we were able to just, you know, motherfuck each other and get it over with. And
yeah. You know, sometimes that's, you just need the catalyst of that happening too, right? Like, you have to, people don't address stuff enough and just sort of let it slide to the wayside. After and it's like, if you want to get past down, it.
I was like, I spent like literally, like I lived at Squig's house when that would all went down, and you know, he hit me in the head with a chair and whatnot. And you know, it kind of came to light that maybe that wasn't a cool thing to do and whatever. I don't hold any ill will towards him now. If everything is, you know, totally cool with me. But like, it definitely became like a situation.
Yeah.
And after the situation, it became like, I still lived at his house for like a month, and we just didn't speak to each other, like at all.
Jeez.
And so yeah, there was just so much tension. And then, you know, you made your posts or whatever, and everything just completely blew up. And it was like, okay. But then, like, you know, a couple of weeks later, like cooler minds had prevailed, and I went back to work. You know, so
yeah, no, my biggest thing was that, but also just you getting unceremoniously let go. That's what sort of set me off, because I didn't feel like you should have been let go. Maybe I wasn't as, you know, deeply part of the situation, but at the same time, I just, like I said, I am protective of the good people in this business, because they should be, like I said, we got to take care of our people more. Yeah. You know, obviously everybody's out for number one to some degree, and you want to get over and be the top of the card and be the champion and stuff like that. But we really need to do a better job of taking care of each other in the industry, taking care of people. And that was me just trying to take care of you.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, I don't know, like, I'm not super, like, don't get me wrong, I would absolutely love to be thought of as, like, one of the, like, you know, top guys or whatever, but, like, I'm just happy to show up and entertain people with my friends.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, quite honestly, like, I was really looking forward to the big PWA anniversary. Well, I shouldn't go there, but there's something to be said about being on the top of the card and being elsewhere. Like, there's being the main attraction, the main storyline, the main event can be a lot of times, and sometimes it's nice to take that step down after a program and just enjoy doing a match for match sake kind of thing. Yeah. So there are certain wrestlers I know, they're like, oh, I always want to be the champion, and then I talk to other wrestlers and it's like, okay, I'm ready to get rid of this belt now. It's like, really? But you're the champion. It's like, yeah, but there's a lot to go with it, you know? And it's nice sometimes just to have an easy night to not be the champion and not be the main event for once. So unless you're heavy metal, then forever you're the main event.
I feel you, for sure. And there's, you know, like, with the whole situation of not having crowds in like a number of months, I'll be totally honest with you. I know most guys would like be like, oh yeah, I want to be in the main event of the show and be the top guy on the show and stuff. And don't get me wrong, I would love to like wrestle heavy metal in the first show back, because I know we would have a great match. But at the same time, there's a big part of me that wants to be like the first guy out in the opening match. Yeah. Just because like the pop is going to be huge, you know?
Yep. Yeah, that first match. So many people want the first match. Like, there's something to be said of that. But yeah, no, I can't wait for us all to get back to shows again, man. It's, and to get people back at shows. It was fun doing the clandestine show, Act Two, but it definitely wasn't Act One, because there was just something special about that crowd that we got out for Act One, right? Like, yeah. That was a perfect storm of pro wrestling that I hope to relive again one day. So,
are you able to spill the beans on any plans for an Act Three?
I'll probably put my foot in my mouth and get in trouble. So as things are, and actually I think tomorrow at 11:30, the premier is going to come out and tell us about his plans for reopening. But the reason we were able to do Act Two is because they relaxed one of the phases to allow filming with no crowds. Mm-hmm. The one big thing, and I'm not gonna go into it with other companies. I know CWE got in some trouble with their local authorities, and Danny went on the Rebel News and stuff like that. But
oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, he did an interview with Sheila Gunn Reid, but I think it was done well. I think it was done well by Danny. It was done well by CWE. I think what it was is basically a health, not much as the police, but a health inspector that was gunning for him. Obviously, how things work in Winnipeg, things can be a little more heated between companies. So someone called it in and probably framed it a different way.
Yeah.
They had a structure to it. They were handling it. Where they went with that, and I'm not a big fan of the Rebel News myself, I get, but it just worked out that way. Where clandestine, you know, one of the big things, the organizers of clandestine wanted to make sure is everything's on the up and up. And so we had that moment where we were able to film again because the government allowed it. And then that, with the rise in the variants, everything went back to lockdown, or, you know, we haven't had an actual lockdown in Alberta, but just more restrictions. One of those restrictions being we couldn't gather and film. So as soon as that gets lifted, as soon as whatever the premier says tomorrow and whatever his plan is going forward, as soon as we are allowed to, we will be again. So,
okay.
And it would be similar to Act Two. But that's all we can do right now. And then someday, yeah, maybe we'll do another show like Act One. But the biggest thing with Clandestine that's a little different from other companies in town is that it's to be able to allow all the other people to work from different companies. Clandestine's not a promotion. Like, it's a show, but it's not like a vying promotion holding shows in Edmonton. Like, our first show, we gave all the tickets away, yeah, right?
There's no competitors. Like,
no, that's the biggest thing is, yeah, Clandestine isn't competing with anyone, and no one's competing with Clandestine. It's like a one-off different concept idea. So yet to get back to that point, we got to make sure we toe that line of, and that's not up to me. That's up to organizers of, you know, how we go about it so that we can have all these guys from other companies come work our show and the promoters don't get upset about it. And that's just the nature of how things are here. Whereas Winnipeg, it doesn't matter who you work for. And I can talk to that for hours, whether the pros and cons, and there are definitely real pros and real cons to having everybody work for everybody. But that's where we're at now is, basically, if we can get a chance, if restrictions come up, we'll definitely tape another show for the fans that are still, you know, itching for wrestling. And then when we can get back and things are opened up more and we can do something more in the vein of Act One again, we'll get to that. But there's a lot. It's funny. There's a lot of planning that goes in the Clandestine that even may not all the wrestlers may see, but it just every box is checked, I find, with that company, and everybody's working together, and you look at like how all the roster is sharing everything, and it's just this like one big happy family that is just trying to improve the business and add more content, and most of all get wrestlers more matches that they can go out there and, you know, in certain companies they can get handcuffed because you're a certain different part of the card. Clandestine's like, you know what it's like being in training. You have your training matches every once in a while, right?
Yep.
And that's what Clandestine is. It's fans won't know it because they don't go to training, but you know, you have matches in training, and the other people that are training serve as a crowd, and that's essentially what Clandestine is. And let's give the fans a taste of that.
I had a banger of a training match against Kid Chocolate. You know, that's one of the reasons. Like, I really, really hope that Clandestine does run again and that I am able to be a part of it, is just because like I don't, get me wrong, I don't have any plans to go to PWA. I've never been invited or anything, but like there's a lot of guys there that would like to wrestle for sure, you know.
Yeah, and that's where that, you know, not everybody can make out of town shows, or it's difficult, where Clandestine's in town, and it shines. It also gives a spotlight to the academy. And it's just more footage and more content to get out there to fans, and the fans that may want to train and go to the academy, right? Mm-hmm. So, and partnering with them was an amazing idea. If
you are going to go to a wrestling academy, like Top Talent, I would say I would put them up as the best wrestling academy in Alberta. And don't get me wrong, I've literally never stepped foot into the NPW training academy. I have never actually been to the AWA wrestling academy. I have been to the Workhorse Academy and trained with Ollie, and that was not my favorite experience.
Yeah, a lot of people don't seem to be saying good things about that right now.
Yeah, I half want to get Johnny Devine on here to talk about that, but also like my podcast isn't really designed to be a salacious thing. But like I say, it was.
You've had a couple shoots in your time.
yeah. There's been a couple, but like it's not my main focus on here. Like I like to avoid it as much as possible for sure. But you know. As far as I'm concerned, like, you got Michael Richard Blaze and Heavy Metal, who, like, together have, like, 30 years of wrestling experience, if not more, you know. And they know what they're doing. They've been all around the world. Michael's done WWE shows.
Metal's worked in Mexico.
Been to Mexico, all across Canada, from Vancouver to Newfoundland. Like, these guys are like the best people in the province currently wrestling, so they're the best people to learn from, in my humble opinion.
Well, and then you have people like the Omen Gabriel Lestat, who has a background in, you know, physical training And is there sometimes I can assist with that? And yeah, Marky, when he heals up and he's got some time, he's been down there a few times here and
We
there.
had
And
the thunder come in one day.
oh,
We learned a ton that day, for sure.
yeah, thunder, man, I cannot say enough nice things. I could do a whole podcast on thunder, but the stuff you can learn from him, and I've been in the ring and learned from him, and just mind-blowing what you can, and having those seminars and stuff like that. Like, they're really working hard to show, all of Alberta, this is a legitimate academy that people can go to. You can come from Saskatchewan or BC, because I mean, the
100%.
BC setup right now is a little bit all over the place too, because I believe ECCW is done. But yeah, it's the best you can get in Alberta, and it's probably one of the best you can get in the West. So
100%. I would totally agree with that. One of the things that I remember, when Thunder came, that was a day, man. I showed up and I was so happy to see him because he used to work for RCW and I hadn't
yep.
seen him in some time. And he was always just a cool guy and, gave me some good advice. So when he showed up and, he put me through my paces there for a little
Oh,
for a little while. It was just me and him and Metal. And
yeah.
there was one point where I was doing this crazy blow up drill and I got so blown up. And then eventually, I was laying on my back and they were like, "Okay, you're cool, you're done." And then I think somebody was like, "Okay, continue." I think Thunder was like, "Okay, let's go again." And then Metal was like, "Oh, he's not gonna go again." And I was like, "No, I'm gonna go again." So these guys just inspire hard work, you know?
Yep. Well, and like we said earlier, man, Thunder was in the dead. Like, Stu stretched Thunder. Like, just think of that, man. Like, if you know about Stu, if you know, like, the guy lived in tents in Edmonton winters and showed up at the YMCA and basically let guys beat the hell out of him until they fucking taught him how to, be a wrestler. So the way Stu went about things, there was no messing around. Like, Thunder's told me stories, and there was no give up. There was no, I can't do this anymore. It was, you kept going and trying, and it through that, that old school tough, it inspired you to be better and better and better. And you get guys like Duke Durango and Thunder, right? So.
There's been many times at the Wrestling Academy because like I say, it is the best academy to go to in my humble opinion, but it's hard work. And
Yep.
there's
Oh,
been a lot of
MRP.
times where I have to jump out of the ring, go to the bathroom, puke, and then wipe myself up, clean up a bit, and then go and get way
Go
back in the
back.
ring because I'm not gonna let anybody say I'm a quitter, you know?
Yeah. And no, and then guys like MRV, he, like, even with his warm-up drills and the squats that he does, like,
Boy.
yeah, he was trained by TJ, right?
Yeah.
And TJ does, like, I mean, he's hard himself. He grew up in the dungeon, so like, these guys don't mess around. And I don't envy you guys. That's one thing I'm worried about, is not actually like jumping in the ring again and running the ropes. It's doing all the squats with
Oh,
MRV before
the
and
squats are
warm up.
killer.
Oh man, I got great. My legs are in great shape, but man, 200. I what's the, I I'm gonna ask you, because I got you here. What's the average amount of squats you do on a warm up?
Typical is about 150,
Yeah.
but there is at least, one day every week, maybe every 2 weeks if you're in, I mean, and I'm saying this in quotations, lucky where it's 500.
Oh,
And
so
then
I gotta start squatting.
occasionally, once in a very blue moon, you get like 1,000.
Competition day.
And you're like, oh, 1,000 squats? Oh my, like, oh geez. But
Oh,
by the time you're done, you're like,
you're blown up, you're done.
well, no, because you do it at the beginning of class. And
Well,
then,
that's what I mean. You're
but like,
in your physically, you're done, and then you gotta take class, right?
yeah, it's like, even like, if you're running the ropes and you have to hit the ropes 100 times, that's hard work.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I understand that.
But it does prepare you because then you go to your match, the next weekend and you're wrestling somebody, and then they'll be like, okay, and then you go there and duck this and duck that, and you're like, okay, well, I'm hitting the ropes like six times here. I might get blown up doing this. But then you think back to, like, you know, the day before when you hit the ropes 100 times, and you're like, okay, well, it's not going to kill me. I'll survive, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah.
You know, hit the ropes five times, big deal, you know?
No, it's just preparing you, because people think they can be wrestlers, and they, and people like myself that did the bar, backyard in the bar, and then you have Metal and Jess get you to run the ropes till you puke, and then you realize what it's all about and what it takes and the conditioning it takes to be out there and perform and do this, right? Yeah.
And it is very, very, very difficult, but, you know, it's so rewarding too.
Yeah.
You know, you do. You get people that are going to buy you jackets and just, like, heck, I appreciate just the fact that I've been at shows and, like, I'll hit a guy with a headbutt and the whole place will go nuts and start honking, you know? Like,
yep.
That's, like, a great feeling.
Well, that's the feeling that not everyone, like, you look at all these old wrestlers and people say, you know, like, why are they still going out there and wrestling? And it's... You know, why are they working these indie shows and still going out and doing it? And it's like, yeah, the monetarily it's there too, but also at the same time, there's something special about having that crowd react to you. That it's that drug that everybody talks about that's been in the business that you can't ever give up. Like, you don't want to ever give up.
It's definitely never been like a super lucrative endeavor for me.
And it isn't at this level, unfortunately.
But I wouldn't complain one bit about it, because, like, even, like, a lot of people have said the same thing to me as Wavell said to you, like, why don't you just stick with ring announcing?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, as a ring announcer, my salary is capped at a pretty low rate.
Yeah.
One thing. For the second thing, nobody's coming to these shows to watch the ring announcer, you know? And
no, and no one's buying the ring announcer's merch.
100%. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you owe it to yourself, and that's why I respect you, is like, you owe it to yourself to try to, when you enter something, whether either you enter a hobby or you enter a goal like losing weight or something like that, or you enter wrestling, you know, you have in the back of your head of something you'd want to try, and it's like, you have to at least try it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't say I went there and I didn't try it, because you're just going to regret that forever. And if anything, you might start, you know, being annoyed at the fact that you're in the role you're in because you never tried for that. And that's where I was with going from ring announcer to managers. I always wanted to be a manager.
Yeah.
I never wanted to be a wrestler, and I enjoyed some of the wrestling stuff I did do, but at the same time, that was my goal and I had to go for it. And you wanted to be a wrestler, and fuck, man, you are the Canadian motherfucking goose. So
I've loved every second of it. I mean, like I say, it is hard work. It's a ton of hard work, and it takes a crap ton of hard work, but all it takes is some hard work.
Yeah. That's free too.
It's not free. No, it's not free.
training
I have to pay to train, but...
Yes. No, but at the same time, like, you reimburse that through getting paid your PO and stuff. But at the same time, like, you don't... you shell out for training, yes. But once, you know, you've done your training and you've been doing it for a long time, it's like... You're not having to shell out money to do this sort of thing. Maybe for gear and stuff sometimes. I mean, I buy enough suits, but yeah, it's... It's amazing little business.
100%. It's fantastic, and it's just my favorite thing. And I seriously, like, I cannot wait to get back in there and do some cool stuff again. And, you know, I think my biggest issue is confidence, and that's, like, probably my goal is to work on that, like.
The more you do, the better you get. Like, that's the biggest thing. And, you know, obviously you got yourself in ring shape. Congratulations on getting under 200.
Well, I don't know. Like, I don't want to claim to be like any kind of, like, you know, chiseled
cruiserweight
stone or you know, physical Adonis. I mean,
no, but
like, I'm probably in better physical condition than I have been in many, many years.
And that just goes to show your drive. Like the biggest thing with the pandemic is at first people are saying, you know, you got to do your hustle. And that was a little bit annoying, but you look at guys that had the drive to keep trying to improve, like Mojibari, and like, and if MRB just always has unlimited amount of drive, it's probably all the coffee. But you look at like when we did Clandestine, of all these people that had been training during the time down and stuff, and to see like the growth in them. And it's just, you have to keep trying to improve and getting better and better, or else I have the utmost respect for people that just can't stop doing that. And then that's the same with like the biggest thing. I was actually having a conversation with Danny Duggan about it, because I've lost 40 pounds. And I said, yeah, and he said, I was like, oh, it's not that much because I still have this much to go. And he's like, whoa, hold on. He's like, it's 40 pounds, man. That's a lot. And he also, you know, in his mind, he's probably one of those people that are a little less, more open about the COVID stuff, or you know, like, I wouldn't say he's sure. an anti-vaxxer.
We don't need to get into his, like,
no, I don't. I don't. But yeah. He goes about it in a very, like, he looks at it in a way of in a realistic manner, and how just how he. Like, both my wife and I worked really hard over the last 6 to 8 months of making sure we're in good shape, just because if we do get sick, and especially if she gets sick, at least we're in a better opportunity, being in better shape, having less, I can never say that word, comorbidities, but less reasons for COVID to take over our body. And you look at someone like Marky, he was in great shape and it happened anyways, but you want to improve yourself to be able to handle this, and you want to improve yourself to be able to handle the ring, and you just have to work hard to keep improving yourself, man. And we all have our down moments, but I absolutely respect that you set yourself a goal and you stuck to it. And I know that all too well, because I've been living that for almost the last year.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, I was not perfect about it. Like, there was days where there were setbacks, you know.
And
like,
you know,
once in a while, you're just like, I need a candy bar.
Yeah. But and the biggest thing is I've had people asking since I was very reluctant to post things about it, and then as I've getting closer to my goal, I've sort of posted some things, and I've had people ask like, what did you do? And I'm like, I've and I think you have as well too, because I've seen you kind of lose and gain some weight over the years, but like, we're both like seesaws. Like, yeah. My entire life I've been from the skinniest kid to a heavier set teenager to a skinny 20-year-old to heavier set 30-year-old. And the biggest thing about that is like, it's not easy, but you not one single person has it. One plan doesn't work for one single person. Like, one simple, you know, like, buy the book will work for you, but it won't work for me. And one of the biggest things I did, and I'm not here to like plug the app or whatever, but really helped us was Noom. And you can go do the research yourself. But the biggest thing about that was just talking about your diet and educating you and realizing that you need to adjust. So like, sometimes you need to give yourself a chocolate bar, because that's who you are and that's what helps you actually succeed.
Yeah. And I mean, I figured for myself, the best thing I can do is keep it super simple.
Yeah.
So I downloaded the MyFitnessPal, which is another like fitness app. And
Yep. You can count your calories and get up workouts. Yeah,
and that's exactly what I do, is I just enter all my calories and I try, like, I have a daily allotment of calories is 2,120 calories. I don't go over that. You know, there's been, like I say, there was some setbacks a couple of times where I did, but like, I'm a human being and I'm gonna, you know, like, you can't be 100% of the time. It's hard.
Well, and you
I'm
can't not trying beat to make yourself excuses up
about it either, but yeah, like, I got here and I'm going to keep going, and you know, maybe I'll get down to 190. I don't want to get too small. You know.
Yeah, that's the problem I'm having. I'm like, am I going to fit my suits right away?
Just kind of, because, you know, I have a feeling if I get way too light in wrestling, people are going to want to throw me around.
Oh, God, you know, yeah, you don't. It's like, okay, I'm going to powerbomb you 3 times. It's like, no.
Powerbomb.
No, it's, it's the biggest thing is you just have to know what works for you, and that takes time, and that has tons of setbacks, but you use those setbacks to learn. And like, man, I still ate Northern Chicken, I still had Faro sandwiches, I still had Faro Cronuts or Donut Party Donuts or things like that. But it's like you fit it in to work, and it's a reward, and you realize that, like, you just watch your habits and realize, like, it's unbelievable how us as humans, with all the technology and everything we have, how we can just sit there and graze.
Yeah.
And you just don't realize how much you're eating or overeating and doing stuff, and how much you're not being active. And like, one of the benefits I feel coming out of this pandemic for at least some people, like you and I included, is like, it got to show you that I need to take a moment to give some silence for a minute, to take a moment to focus on yourself, to realize what worked for you. And I'm trying to get to 180 in, I think, 2 more weeks, 10 more pounds to go. But it's what I aimed for back in my 20s, when I was in great shape and I was commuting every day and backcountry hiking, bicycle commuting every day and backcountry hiking. I was at a very comfortable 180. I was even lower than that, and dangerously lower at times. Like I said, just, it's always been a seesaw for me, but I might come back up to 190 and be comfortable there, because I feel very comfortable where I'm at now, but I want to just hit my goal to say I did it. So actually, I'll tell you right now, and I haven't really told a lot of people, but there's an Instagram out there that I made a year ago. It was, Fit to 40. And I was like, a year ago, I was telling myself, I'm going to be fit by 40. I've been planning this since I was 35, believe it or not, when I started putting on weight. And I kept telling myself, so for the last 5 years, Kyle, I have tried and failed and tried and failed and tried and failed. And I lost 50 pounds back when I first started with PWA. I don't know if you remember that, when I lost a bunch of weight there. And that was 2 years ago. And then I put it back on. And it's just like, you just need to know that some people, especially as people like myself that are go back and forth, you just can't let those bad things get to you, and keep on pushing, keep on hustling, keep on trying to find that comfortable little ground to make yourself better. And that goes with wrestling too, is you got to keep pushing and trying and training and stuff like that to make yourself.
And it can be like a huge struggle, especially in a situation like the pandemic, because like a lot of my eating isn't brought on by, you know, I'm hungry. It's because like I'm a super depressed,
I'm bored,
or upset, or bored. Like, and you know, and like I, you know, admittedly, like I indulged way too much in like booze and stuff, you know.
Yep. So,
like,
same here, man.
Cigarettes and marijuana, and that's, you know, and I don't hold it. I'm not judgmental. I don't hold it against anyone that wants to smoke weed or drink beer. And in fact, like even when I say I had setbacks, like, I smoked some weed fairly recently and had a good time, and I probably will again, but like, you know, it's just, you can't let it take hold of you and whatnot.
And you need to be cognizant of how it's handling you. Cause I was the same way too. Cause like everybody was drinking at the start of the pandemic. You had nothing better to do. And so the wife and I would have a few drinks a night, and then you notice, like, usually with a drink, you might want a snack. Right. And you're sitting watching shows, not doing anything. And then you just need to be cognizant of what you're doing with yourself. And like, sometimes I have a cheat day or night where I'll have something, and then it's like, okay, back to the grind and back at it. And it's not like I'm sitting here starving myself. It's just basically better diet. It's choosing, instead of bread, to have, or you know, instead of spaghetti, you have rice noodles, or just something with, you know, it's like working with the calories. And so many people say, oh, counting calories doesn't work. Well, it doesn't work for you, but it's what worked for me. It's what helped me, educate me about what I'm putting in my body every day, and about, you know, what I was putting in my body prior to that that made it detrimental. So
to me, it's just science. Like, you burn more than you take in, and you will you'll lose weight, right? So that's why I've just kept my diet basic, like calorie counting. I don't worry about like how much the macros are. I don't worry about the protein and the carbs and the
fats. No,
as long as I come in under 200 or under 2,120 calories a day, I am feeling good.
Yep. Yeah, and that's, it's just what worked for you. So that's 100%.
Anyway, but... Thad, let's get your social media plugs out of the way here because we have gone double time.
I win. So yeah, social media. I am literally everywhere. One of the things that's actually helped me with not having Arch Report during the pandemic is actually TikTok, which I know a lot of people roll their eyes at, but it's given me an option, an area where I can do that video content, and I can do it myself and do it quick and get something out there. So I'm at TikTok at Thaddeus Archer 3. I'm at Facebook at Thaddeus Archer 3. I'm at Twitter at Thaddeus Archer 3. And then on Instagram, I'm just Thaddeus Archer. No 3 on that. I realized too late to change it. And then I'd been tagged and stuff, so I didn't want to change it. So outside of that, over at YouTube, TA3TV. It used to be Thaddeus Archer III was the channel. TA3TV is now the channel. We changed that at the beginning of the year, hoping that we were going to film Clandestine in December, but the pandemic changed that. So, yeah, we didn't have a lot of content to put out, but I'm really trying to get some more content for the channel. And, yeah, TA3TV is where you see your Archer Report, your Thad About Town, which we did one during the pandemic. We're going to try to do soon more of visiting local businesses and showing people where they want to go to eat or just grab local wares. And then the Hot Seat, which right at the beginning of the pandemic, we had 2 months worth lined up to film. As soon as we get a chance with the pandemic, we'll be back with the Hot Seat and any other shows we may come up with on the TA3TV YouTube channel. So, yeah, that I think is all my social media. So
I like your Hot Seat thing, man. I mean...
Well, it's funny. I finally had someone comment on one of the videos of how we were ripping off Hot Ones. And the biggest thing is it's not a ripoff. Yeah, we know that. Like what we're doing is we're taking a concept that obviously already works, and it's an homage to what Sean and the people do over at First We Feast. And we're just doing it at a local level to try to teach people more about local people, you know, local figures, bands, boxers, comedians, all that kind of stuff. And
Connor and David on there now that he's going to have a lot of free time on his hands.
Well, I think we were pursuing George LaRocque at one point in time. There were actually some like good names. We had some good names lined up for the second season we were going to film. We had the one of the producers of Making Coco. We had Josh Clausen from CTV who had agreed to do it. The Weatherman and just a whole handful of other people. And I hope we can get back there because it's my way of paying back to Northern Chicken because it gives them a spotlight. It gives them a chance to make all these crazy sauces.
They do make great chicken there. It's so good.
Yeah, they make great chicken and they make they go out of their way to make insane sauces for the show. All of their own pocket just to, you know, get people to come in. And the great thing is what we're different from Hot Ones is you can come play once the pandemic is over. You can come, like most people. Sean Evans always says he wishes people could play with him and people play from home and they sell stuff to play from home. But here you can come and have professionals make it for you and you can sit down and see if you can take on all these chicken fingers with these crazy sauces and see if you can take on the last one that's marinated in Reaper mash and will burn your face off.
I did the when I was in Victoria. My cousin Dale's a huge Hot Ones fan, and he ordered some of that Da Bomb hot sauce. And he just gave me a sample of it. Small little sample, and it was crazy.
Like, yeah, that one's probably like right up there with the worst sauce that Northern Chicken makes. The last dab on Hot Ones actually really isn't that hot, even with the Reaper in it. The Bomb is worse than the last dab. Like, the Bomb is just tastes horrible. It's brutal. It hurts.
It wasn't fun. I was like, why would anyone put this on their food?
No, it's literally just a gimmick. Like, it's there to hurt you. And so, yeah. It's fun to do and it's interesting and I love putting myself through, just like wrestling or anything else, through something to entertain people. So
solid.
And there's been some, yeah.
Oh, I was just gonna say, if you want to carry on, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say that Lisa, when we had Lisa on the show, the comedian, she blew like everybody else out of the water. Like, she went right to the end and handled all the hot sauce, so it's really not that bad. Like, it's a little bit pain for some fun and gain sort of thing. So we got that, and I really hope to get back to Thad About Town. because I found a real true love in that, in sharing local. My wife is a small business owner, so it's like, it's a very, it hits home, and I want to share all these local small, like, I just, in doing it the first time around, learning people's stories, it's like, I just want to share that more with Edmonton, so that more people know that you can go get this amazing chicken, or you can go get this amazing sandwich, or you can go, if you're a fly fisherman, there's a fly fishing place in town, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you went to like a comic book store, and didn't you go to a cat cafe?
Yeah, which I miss so much. That's where we got our cat Seamus from, and unfortunately they had to shut down. But
Really? Oh, that's a shame. I didn't.
Yeah, because them and Variant Comic Book Store were sponsors for PWA. Unfortunately, Nicole decided to choose a different path, and she seems super happy now and where she's going with all that stuff. But she brought us another member for our family, and I just love that, like going to these places, like Patty's Cheese, a cheese shop with this with Fern, who is like a curmudgeonly old lady, but she was just a sweetheart as well. And just getting to meet and share these people with the city is just as much a passion of mine as sharing wrestling with everyone. So,
and it's definitely a thing I've noticed, being somebody that's, you know, moved to Edmonton, you know, not super recently, but fairly recently, that there's a lot of hidden, like, gems, especially like Northern chicken. Like, if you want to eat in Edmonton, you got some choices, you know. There's places to eat in this town.
You really do. And like, we could have stuck to just restaurants, but we wanted to share the wealth with all small business. And like Foam Fighters, for instance, with all the Nerf playground where you can shoot each other with Nerf guns, and they literally have Nerfs from like the 70s and 80s to now. Like, they have a Nerf museum in there. It's crazy. And they have like a cafe in there too. So like, we're sharing the restaurant. They make amazing food. Like, the owner's wife makes amazing food. So it's just neat to find these and also help them, because, you know, Tim Hortons, McDonald's, they have a budget from corporate that they can do all this advertising. Yeah. But these small businesses don't have advertising. So, and we have not made a single dime off of advertising. We've done all this by the kindness of our own hearts, just because we want to help these people. So,
yeah. And I mean, like, in the way of like McDonald's and Burger King and stuff, like, the food's nowhere near as good.
Oh, no, like, no. Like, even Popeyes, like,
anywhere,
it's,
right? Like,
yeah.
They don't need you to highlight them.
No, but you get these, like, the great thing, like, you look at Northern Chicken, they come up these sauces or specials or different things. Like, you get to try something you may never try before. Like, I brought a whole box of Cronuts from Faro to my work, and Cronuts are donuts and Cronuts mashed up together. And it's like, donuts, looks like a donut.
Cronuts or donuts?
Oh, sorry. Croissants, and donuts. So it's like a flaky croissant, but it's the shape of a donut, and it's got filling like a donut, but it's like flaky and croissant-y.
Oh god!
And I'm
diet, bro.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. and the blueberry cheesecake one they have this month is so good, but they do a different one every month. And I brought in the work, and people were just like, some people heard of it but never tried it, and then some people like didn't even know it was a thing. And it was like, I had all my coworkers like thanking me, not just for bringing something in, but just like they get to try something new. And that's like, I introduced them to that, and it was funny. The one group of mechanics went and ordered a whole box from the next day, so then it just paid it forward, right? Like, me bringing in a box for people, it just brought more people to buy another box from Lane and his team over at Faro. So
that's solid. Who catered the clandestine?
Well, who? What do you think?
Was it Northern Chicken?
Did you watch the Archer Report?
I sure. Oh yeah, you did bring out a piece of chicken at the end there.
So yeah, out of the gently used urn. There's a scoop for you. That urn did at one point have ashes in it.
Okay.
So I just dangled it in there. You can kind of see my hand sort of sitting there. I didn't like actually let it touch anything, and then just gently pulled it out, trying not to touch the side. So I was eating dead person.
I don't want to laugh in case like somebody is like, you know, grieving about their lost family member or whatnot. But, you know,
what they won't know won't hurt them. So, but yeah, I got some Northern Chicken just because it was kind of last minute. And to the credit of Matt and Andrew and their team, I could literally call them at any point in time and they'll like when my father passed away, they basically catered for all my family as we cleaned out my father's house. It was our last night there. It took us a whole week to clean out the entire place. And for, I think it was like 13 or 15 of us, they brought over and gave us a full spread. Out of the kindness of their own hearts, just because of everything, they basically catered us a meal out of the kindness of their own hearts. And those are the kind of people they are. And it's like people in Edmonton need to know of these people, because for all they give, I'd love to see Edmonton give back to them or support them more, right? Those are the good people, man. Those are the people that we need to fight for, much like yourself. And, you know, you got to take care of the people, and they take care, man. They haven't just built a restaurant, man. They've built a community. Like, it is, you feel homey when you go there, do you not?
Yeah, like I mean, I've only,
you took your shirt off in the restaurant.
Yeah,
so you
I've
must
only
felt
gone
like
there
you're
a couple of times. Like, it was the one time we went for Barricade's bachelor party, and then there was another time when my mom first moved to Edmonton. I was like, yeah, we got to go to this chicken place because they have the best fried chicken like I've ever eaten. So
yeah, but yeah. No, it's just very. I call my home away from home, but it's very much like, it's not just a restaurant; it's a community. It's something special, and much like any of these small businesses I've been talking about, they're the same, and that's why we want to help them. That's why we want to spotlight them. It's because, you know, once you're part of the community, you feel like you're part of another family. And I've had so many people thank me for sending them there, just because they've had such great experiences, and they continue to go there, and then they become regulars, and it's just this perfect circle.
Yeah, it's great stuff. In the video, you were dressed up as Paul Bearer, and you were part of the imitation game. And I would be like, it would, you know, since we don't seem to have a time limit on this, I might as well ask you about that. Like, how did you playing Paul Bearer come about during that whole affair? I thought it was fantastic, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I guess we can end on that, because I really, what happened is the powers that be mentioned to me that for Act Two, there was an idea. Somebody got their hands on a Kane costume. So there was talk of doing a Kane versus Undertaker match, and Metal being Undertaker. And I jumped at the chance to be able to manage Metal again. And so there were some talk of, well, actually first brought up was, do you have a white suit? Do you want to be Brother Love? And I was like, I haven't bought a white suit because for the most part, ring can be kind of dirty. Try to steer away from a white suit as much as I do want to own one day. And I was like, but I have a black suit and there's always Paul. And so it was set that I think originally it was supposed to be Michael Allen, Richard Clark as Kane, who's a very big Kane fan, versus Metal as that. And then there was another person chosen, but they didn't fit the costume. And so it ended up being MRB versus Metal. And so leading up to it, I really started taking it to heart, because I have like the, I don't mention Percy or Paul or Bill as one of my one of the people that's like my influence or one of my idols, but he very much is. Like, I actually, of all things, I really enjoy his time as Percy Pringle and managing Stunning Steve Austin and stuff like that. So I really wanted to do him justice. So I spent a lot of time in the weeks prior to that sort of working on my Paul and trying to get facial mannerisms and trying to do him justice, because I have just such a high level of respect for the body of work he's done, and God, you know, rest in peace. But like, I just wanted to do him justice, because I'm like, I heard something to the nature that Chris Jericho saw at part of Act One. He saw the imitation game, or he was, yeah, it was, what was it? It was when we were watching that Clandestine on Jupiter Vision on Twitch.
Okay.
He was in Calgary. He's from Calgary, and he was mentioning that someone had told him that Chris Jericho was sent the YouTube video of that, just to see the imitation of Jack Pride as Y2J and Davey O'Doyle as Batista. So it was just like, okay, well, if at some point in time this just gets out there and someone's like, yeah, there's an Undertaker versus Kane, man, you know, wrestlers like to watch good.
Did Jericho express any opinion about it?
I can't remember. We'd have to ask him. Like, he mentioned something to someone, but he didn't really talk about it online.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Like friend through a friend. Because, like, all of us wrestlers send each other all kinds of stuff, whether it's really shitty matches or really good matches. Like, we'll watch anything and get some form of enjoyment out of it.
Yeah. probably everyone in Alberta's seen the Canadian Goose and Will the Thrill against Squig.
We won't talk about
that. No, that's not.
but yeah, so I was just like, if this gets out there one day and I'm doing like a half-assed Paul, I'm going to hate myself.
Yeah.
So I got to do a good Paul. And the best compliment I got was after the match was done, the other wrestlers that were, you know, being our crowd behind the camera, one of them told me, they said, every time there was a lull in the match, I heard you do your Paul Bearer. Oh, yeah. Like just out of nowhere. And they're like, I popped. Like each time there was like a little bit of a lull, you did that and like brought me right back. And then the action continued to happen. And so, yeah, I felt very proud and happy with how it went. And then like I put one video out and it seems that certain fans on Twitter have kind of I've actually had people message me and a lot of people say that I should make it a regular thing, and I'm like, oh god, like that takes makeup, man. Like I had to black spray
paint. You could be PBJ Paul Bearer Jr.
Jr.
Yeah.
Well, like someone's like, you should do like watching cat videos or kid videos on YouTube as Paul and stuff like that. And I'm just like, oh, like A, time. B, it takes a lot of makeup. I have to spray my hair black and then I have to wash all this stuff out. And I'm like, maybe one day I might, you know, dress up for the day and punch out a bunch of content again. But like, I just don't know if I could do it all the time. But it was such a great opportunity to do it. Then and work with Metal as Taker. It was,
I just love the whole concept, like the imitation game. I think it's fantastic. I would love to do one where I get to wrestle as like Mick Foley, because he's like my favorite guy from back then. Don't get me wrong, I, you know, doing a bunch of Mick Foley spots would probably be kind of hard on my body, but yeah. I think it would be worth it. It would be fun.
So what you're saying is we should build a Hell in the Cell and Top Talent Academy. No. You and Metal recreate the Hell in the Cell. I love this idea. I'm calling Metal as soon as we're done.
I pitched it to them back when, like, before I got injured. I was like, yeah, I'd like to do, like, a run-in as Mankind. It'd be awesome.
Yeah. Well,
but the idea was, oh, we'll throw you off the balcony here, and I was like, yeah, maybe not.
That's what happens when you're Mick Foley, man. You gotta step up. But no, I really love, like, with the first one, how we had the imitation game and we had the dildo on a pole match, and
yeah, there was a lot of variety.
And that's why I really like. I love comedy wrestling. I know not everybody does. Like, I love British style wrestling, mm-hmm. and I do love North American wrestling. I love lucha wrestling. I love Japanese, like, strong style. And I just think having all that encompassing, you look at like some of the bigger independent companies down in the States and they're doing stuff like that. You look, just you pull it all stops and do all kinds of different matches to keep people entertained. And so many people love the imitation. So many people love the dildo on a pole. So many people, I won't say so many people love the hardcore match, but it was definitely experience. I don't know if we do that all the time, but I'd love to see that. And that's not up to me, but I'd love to see that with Clandestine as we keep, you know, the imitation game, but maybe we start keeping some more, or, you know, introducing some more gimmick. Let's be honest, gimmick matches and stuff, just to keep it fresh, keep people interested. It goes back to me doing the bar wrestling and having music. It's when you have everything short attention span theater with people nowadays, so you have to keep their interest. So you got to switch things up and change things up.
I really am like a huge fan of like all that outside the box stuff. Like even this last WWE pay-per-view they did, and they had like a match that was zombie lumberjacks. I didn't really care about the pay-per-view, so I was busy or something. I didn't end up watching the pay-per-view, and then I found out about this, and I went back and I watched that one match and was like, you know what? It was pretty decent. I actually enjoyed that. Like,
and people hated it, but like people also enjoyed it, and it was just something different. You got to do something different once in a while. You can't do the same thing over and over. And wrestling's been happening for so long that so much is, if everything has been done, and we don't want to like all kill ourselves jumping off balconies and shit like that. So you got to think of different ways to do it. Imitation game is a way to change up a card so there's a different match in there, but still have a match. And then it's not your standard just one-on-one match, right? Yeah. So I hope to see more of that. I'd love to see something like we were learning with the act two of how to do it in Top Talent Academy and tape an entire act in one day. And so we'll be better, you know, the next time and the next time. But I know a cluster tribute was something that we wanted to do, even just for our Patreons. And we ran out of time. We were there till like 1 or 2 in the morning. Oh. So I'd love to see like the cluster tribute return, and maybe even some point in time, like Halloween, mashed together the cluster tribute imitation game. So you have a battle royal where everybody dresses up or just anything. Like it just, that kind of stuff is fun. It's a nice little change of pace
I've talked about Love Wrestling and being a part of it. And I've been talking a lot about the fact that I'm going to be like launching my second podcast sort of deal on there, and I've actually, like, I guess I'll talk about it now because I'm very close to actually starting to tape it. It's the concept is called it's the goose call.
Yeah.
And it's going to be me and a guest, and we're going to watch a match from YouTube, and I want to do like bizarre weird matches. Like the first one we've got lined up is Orange Cassidy versus Hornswoggle. And then the Swamp Monster is on the outside as one of their managers. So, like, I talked to Spencer about this. I got it all cleared. He's talked to the people at Beyond Wrestling who put the video up on YouTube, and they told us, yeah, if you want to use any of our videos, just let us know which ones you want to use.
Oh, that's great.
So I got that one. And then there's another one I really want to cover, which is from Game Changer Wrestling, and we're working on getting the permissions from them and stuff. And that one is The Invisible Man versus
Stan.
This is like the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. Purists won't say that, but
no, 100%. Like if you're like, you know, if you're a grizzled like guy who's like wrestling should be like a sport and very realistic and stuff. Yeah, it's not gonna be up your alley, you know. But I mean, Orange Cassidy is like one of the like main guys on AEW now. He's fantastic. I love him. You know.
Yeah, it's just different strokes for different folks. And how are you ever? So wrestling has a stigma, an idea about it of what it was in from the Hackett Schmidt era to the 70s, 80s, 90s, like you name it. Wrestling sort of had this. You know, people have an idea of what it is if they're not a fan. Why not do different things sometimes that, you know, like I'm not a fan of being too over the top on spots and not selling things. But outside of that, having these sort of gimmick type side matches, it brings more people to the party. Like my wife and even in my daughters, I don't watch wrestling with them because they're not wrestling fans. I'm not going to shove it down their throat. But my wife will come and watch an indie show because it's got some different stuff and different people. And she doesn't have to be invested in the storyline. Or my daughter will watch Lucha Underground because it's different and more cinematic. And so, like, why not do these different things to try to get more people to the party? Like, we need to get more fans invested in wrestling. We want to get back to the crazy end of the 90s. We want to get back to the 80s. You know, we want to get back to having full venues. And so you got to try stuff. Throw it against the wall. Same with Archer Report. Try it, throw it, see if it sticks.
Completely agree. Like, even, like, well, I mentioned it earlier, the Baconator on a pole match that me and Squig had. Like, it was my idea. And don't get me wrong, it wasn't like a home run or anything. It's not hailed as one of the greatest comedy matches of all time or anything like that. But, like, I knew I had to wrestle Squig for the sake of the storyline, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
why not make it interesting? It gave it more publicity, or people, you know, looked at it more as opposed to just a match, because they're like, well, what's this Baconator doing in a match?
Me and Squig are not Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle, and we've had matches before, and so it's like, you know, let's at least try and make this interesting, you know.
Well, and that's a lot of people don't realize. My TikTok came on there. A lot of people don't realize, like, some of these matches can help hide some deficiencies or expertise or little things. Like, you know, having a comedy match sometimes can be the easiest thing in the world for a wrestler, so it's like a night off. Or if a guy's injured, you can have a comedy match. Or if a guy's a little green, you can have a comedy match. And it just, it kind of, having that extra bit of something there hides where they might need a little work or they're injured or something like that. So it just, I just think there's a lot of benefits to it. And the book's been thrown out the window and brought back in so many times with wrestling. It's like, why not just throw the stuff out? Yeah. So yeah, I'm really happy with Clandestine doing that. And I hope they continue like this one. We only had one imitation. I really hope, even just not another imitation, but you kind of introduce a few other wild side type things, different things, right? Like, obviously we don't want to go back to cleaning up after that hardcore match again, but maybe again one day.
I mean, especially like,
or sorry, no death match, there, not hard
death match. Like, I would not be wanting to do that nonsense in front of nobody. You know, if I'm gonna get all cut up and like bleed all over the place, I want there to be at least be some people there to, you know, raise the adrenaline levels and stuff.
Well, and man, that match was just so funny. Like, it was like being in a war zone. It just, you could feel the uneasiness in the air between, not just in the ring, but with the fans. Like, it was,
crazy.
It was experience, because it's like you go to Tournament of the Death matches out in that field out in Iowa or whatever it is. And it's like those fans are going there for death match wrestling. So it's like, even still, they're going and doing crazy stuff out there, and that's, you know, off the wall, even in deathmatch scenarios. But for just the normal fan to get to, say, you know, experience that once, that's an experience in its own right. Like, everybody I've heard talk about it, whether it's reviews or people online, it's like, I don't know if I liked it, but I'm glad I got to see it or be part of it. Because you had to wear safety glasses and glass was flying everywhere.
I'm right there, like, with you, because, like, there was a part of me that was, like, super looking forward to it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I didn't, like, we're all kind of buddies, and I didn't want to see, you know, Sheik or Colton Kelly or Evan Adams get hurt. I didn't want to see anyone get injured. I didn't want to see you get injured. I mean, you ended up taking, like, bumps on barbed wire and everything, too. But, like, I do remember, like, after my match was over, the whole concept of the show was that it was by the boys for the boys and a big party. And so, like, after your match, yeah, go out and drink some beers and have a good time and watch the rest of the show. So that's what I did. But it's like glass is flying towards me. I'm like, these people that are going to these CZW death matches, like, you're in the line of fire, man.
Yeah.
Even well, when, Vince Austin and Jason the Terrible used some glass in one of their matches, it was like, be careful and make sure you, like, aim that towards the side of the ring here where there's the least amount of people, because, like, it's going to be rough if somebody catches some glass in their face or something, you know?
The broken pieces, we basically spent the entire match, all of us, all four of us, stomping on the broken pieces just so they didn't get knocked and fly in and stab into someone.
Yeah.
So, like, you'd be in the ring, the ringside, and you just stop for a second and stomp on some glass just so you'd crush it more so it wouldn't, like, catch air and fly into someone. And yeah.
Or it slice was, you up if you ended up taking a bump on it. Like,
well, yeah, if you watch the Dark Side of the Ring about Nick Cage there, he just he fell into some ring ropes at Tournament of Death there and just fell on a shard of a thing and cut himself, like, super bad that he died in flight on the helicopter to the hospital. So it's like, just any accident can happen, so you gotta. And it's like, it's not something that, you know, we do all the time, but it was something different. And so was the Imitation Game. And so was Dildo and the Pole Match. And I hope to see those two do a follow-up that I've heard planned. Or I love that. Like, I want to see more of that. With some of these more traditional promoters, they're kind of stuck in their ways. And I understand that, and that's what it is. But Clandestine's that opportunity to try new things and for the boys and for the fans and just a training, just different, just fun and weird and strange, or just some matches that are just like where you would get 6 minutes on a mid card if you go work for this company, but there you can let two guys like Mo Jabari and Sean Moore go at it for like 15 minutes and just, I don't even think they went 15, but like it gives them an opportunity to do things they can't do in other companies. So.
You know who impressed me like incredibly at the Clandestine. Well, I mean, there's really like two people. I mean, Zoe, her outing against Metal was like incredible.
Yes, and that was an amazing story to tell.
I am so, so impressed with the improvement that Teve has made. MRB's brother, Stephen Crow.
Yes.
He's just, well, like, he blew me away.
I made a point of walking up to MRB after their tag match together, and I was just like, so this is what you've been doing with him during the pandemic? Because I was like, I've seen him work in the ring a bit, but to see his improvement there and actually just to see where he can go, because he's still learning, right? But mm-hmm. it's, man, like, he has shades of his brother in him. It reminds me a lot of Sean Moore and his brother Alexander Prime.
Oh, I didn't know that. I don't know if those guys were brothers. I had no idea.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And I remember meeting them when they were both, like, just fresh out of training with HIW, and they came and worked in RCW, or a handful of RCW shows or a tour. And I remember everybody was all about Prime, and I remember looking at Moore and thinking, like, yeah, Prime, even myself, I thought, like, Prime is the guy that's, you know, the two brothers that's going to go on to do great things. And he had some injuries and things changed in his life. And then you look at, like, where Sean's went with that. And it's just like, who knows? Teve could be a level above MRB one day. And I can see it from that clandestine act two alone. Right. Like, yeah. It's,
I think that I would like to team up with him one time just because the Crow and the Goose. You know. The birds of prey.
I was going to say birds of a feather, but
yeah, the birds of a feather is even better because geese are not really hunting prey seeking birds.
No, but you can flock together, right?
So. Yeah, yeah. I think it would be a ton of fun.
Well, it's just nice to have that option, you know, yeah. And that's what I love about clandestines. It gives the fans, it gives the wrestlers another option to just go out there and have fun. So, and I welcome more stuff like that. That's well structured, well planned, professional, not just some guy that got his mommy daddy's money and wants to start up a Christian wrestling show or something like that. It's like, these are people in the business that want to do something for the business, for the people in the business, and for the fans of the business. Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, make sure you look out in the future. The Canadian Goose has been booked to work on the Christian National Enterprise. Rob Steele put it together. He asked me to come be a part of it. I am planning to at some point. So, you know,
he has approached me as well. So
nice. Well, I mean, yeah, maybe we'll get to work together, and you know.
No, I'd love to, and you know, I have no love loss for Rob.
I'm not going to take shots at the guy because, like,
no, his me, first, so, yeah. Yeah, his first foray was sort of on his own, and he had a few people, different people, talking at him to try to. It just didn't work out well. Now he's working with what's his name out in Manitoba, who's been in the business for a little while. So maybe they'll have something good. I mean, I'm just like Metal says, I'll take the booking. So.
I was supposed to do their show in Winnipeg, and that was right when I had my pulled groin, right?
Oh, okay. And I wonder why you didn't make it out there for that.
Yeah.
Because I spoke to Mitch Clark about working the show, so.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up talking to Mitch Clark, too, because he asked me, and, like, he was, you know, I made it very clear to Rob that I, you know, I wanted to do it, but I was totally, because he sent me a little bit of a, like, a deposit, and I said, I'll send you this money back. I'm really sorry, but, like, I'm injured, and I did end up working an RCW show that night, but it was in Edmonton, so I didn't have a 13-hour car ride home had I, you know, hurt myself, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they were going to have me wrestle this fella that apparently, from what I had been told by a few people, was going to be, like, that guy's first match and stuff. And it was like, I am just not the person to put in there with somebody
for their first match. You want a veteran for that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and the guy apparently is, like, massively huge, too, and strong as an ox, so I was like, you know.
I don't want to get squished.
Yeah, yeah, no, like, I don't have a problem putting anyone over, but I would like to you know, ride home the 13 hours without being in severe pain. So I do, yeah. Like I say, I'm actually pretty stoked to actually go and wrestle for them, because I've never wrestled outside of Alberta, you know?
So. Yeah, no, it's funny. I had King Cash, when HIW was open, contact me, because Crazy Horse, who I've worked with before on shows, back when I was a ring announcer, an amazing, long-standing manager in Canada, was retiring, and so they were doing a bit of a retirement storyline, and Rex Roberts, to his credit, that lovely bastard, wanted to bring me in as a catalyst to his retirement, and it just didn't work out at the time with my work and family schedule. But like, that's same here. I'd love to work out of the province at some point in time, because I've worked all over this province, so, and just work for another company, another place. And it's sad that HIW is gone, because, man, Cash is one guy I'd love to, that's another one of those veterans, like, that's another guy, he's got himself in incredible shape over the last year or two, that I know he wants to go out there and do some more matches before he gets too older, and I'd love to work with that guy as well. It's,
yeah, I mean, I think it's everybody's, like, aspiration in wrestling to be able to be, like, traveling, you know, person, you know.
Well, because that's sort of the be old standard of wrestlers, is that you run the roads, right? So it's you want to run the roads as far as you possibly can, all the way to Newfoundland or Japan or you name it, right? So.
Yeah. Awesome possum, bud. Well, we have, we are...
I think we've killed the time limit.
Yeah, we are 9 minutes shy of three times the time limit. when I had to run upstairs there for a second, were you able to hit your Twitter and Facebook plugs and stuff?
Yeah, everything's up there. Thaddeus Archer 3 at everything except for Instagram. It's Thaddeus Archer and TA3TV. And follow me on TikTok for my weird-ass videos. And you can see some Paul Bearer in there. And yeah. Awesome. Thanks for having me on, Goose.
Hey, man, thank you so much for doing it. I'm glad that it all got, we were able to finally sit down and do this. And I'm so glad that you actually took the extra time to go for it, too. Cause, like,
oh, no, 100%. I don't I got to make up for the hour we lost, or that 2 hours we lost. So.
And I mean, like, a big part of, like, this is just me and you catching up. Like,
yeah.
We haven't talked in a while, and, you know, I just appreciate it, because, like, you definitely are one of my favorite people in the business, and have, like, helped me in, like, just, like, some incredibly, like, great ways, right? Like,
yeah, no, the sentiment is shared right back at you, man. So.
Awesome possum, buddy. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. I hope everyone listening to this enjoyed the extra long episode of Monday Night Shaw. And
TA 3 hours.
Yeah, TA 3 hours. And we will we'll see you guys again, okay? And Thad, I will talk to you later.
Hong Kong. Nova Scotia and the Brunswick. Quebec and Newfoundland.